Lesson 2. Dare to step outside the boundaries of conventional wisdom. Nothing great was really ever accomplished until a person was willing to dare to do something that conventional wisdom had declared impossible. We're living in an age when the impossible is becoming possible anyway. We're finding new ways of doing things. I'm thinking now of Buckminster Fuller, who invented things for which there wasn't yet the technology to bring them into actual manifestation. But he was sure that that technology would come along, and in some cases, it already has. So he had that vision to expect in the future that this idea would be possible. And I'll never forget a radio interview that I heard in which the interviewer asked him, "You've been talking about these things now for 25 years or more than that. Don't you get discouraged when nobody really listens? Everybody sort of thinks, well, it's an interesting thought and nobody does anything about it. Isn't that discouraging to you? Here you are in the last chapter of your life." Buckminster Fuller was in his 80s at the time. "And you probably won't live to see your major ideas brought to fruition. How do you feel about it?" And Buckminster Fuller gave a beautiful answer. He said, "It doesn't matter. Nothing worthwhile is ever accepted until at least a generation has passed. My purpose is to bring the ideas forth. I know that they will be accepted in another generation, two generations. But this is the way of human nature. It's the way things work with humanity. And therefore, I'm not at all discouraged. Rather, I feel very gratified that I have this opportunity to bring my ideas out so that people can think about them and grow into them." Max Planck, the director and I believe perhaps founder of the Max Planck Institute, made the statement that no new scientific discovery is accepted on the basis of its merits, or usually it is not. Usually it is accepted because the old generation of scientists dies. New scientists, young scientists come up who have grown up accustomed to these ideas and therefore can accept them. So very often in our lives, we are limited by our conditioning, not by reality, but by what we take to be reality. An experiment that I've mentioned in one of these other videotapes, but a very interesting one, was a tank of fish with a barrier, a partition of glass, in the middle of this tank. And the fish would swim up to the barrier and not be able to go any further. And they kept that barrier there until they'd had time to get conditioned. Then they removed the barrier, and they found that the fish would still only swim as far as that barrier had been, but no longer was. They could perfectly easily keep swimming, but they didn't, because they'd been conditioned to think that they couldn't. Well, this is the way of human nature, too. We may not be quite that dense, but it sometimes is astonishing the extent to which we are dense. That is to say, to which we are bound by our present ways of thinking, our present expectations. This is true in science, as Max Planck said, and it's the most open-minded, at least tries to be open-minded, of all the various disciplines of man. Well, then how much truer do we find it to be in politics, where people will become utterly fanatical on points that nobody's ever had a chance to prove? Art, where the same thing is true. Education, there's hardly any field of life where there's more limitation to human consciousness owing strictly to human pre-expectations and dogmas. But it's true all across the board. We think that such and such a thing has to be so, and therefore we make it so. But if you want to actualize your ideas, and I'm assuming that you want to have ideas that are worth actualizing, and so have great ideas, great expectations of life, not just a new flavor for bubble gum or something, then if you will do this, you will find that you will be able to reach out and accomplish great things. If you will have the courage to see things in new ways and not be limited by what other people have done. Isn't this actually the story of science? That the scholastic period and the medieval ages had brought human investigation to its utmost limit. It couldn't go any further. And then science came on with a whole new way of looking at things. Now we think, well, science is giving us reality, but it's not reality. It's only how we, it's only reality reflecting back to us our own expectations. If we looked at the universe in another way, we'd see a whole different series of realities. And so, if we could learn to think of what... See, this is the first thing that people usually will do. If somebody has a new idea, they say, all right, let's study what other people have done. And if nobody has done it, or if they failed in the past, then they'll say, well, we just can't do that. Well, big conglomerates that have to put out a book that has to earn them many millions in order to make the many millions that they want, in order to put out more books and more pot boilers and so on. I don't mean to be entirely sarcastic, because there's a rationale to their way of doing things too, although very often it means a total corruption of the ideal of literature. Nevertheless, they may have to, given their premises, think in terms of, well, what sells? And so, if a particular formula sells, then they have to get their writers to have the first sex scene on page 141, and the first violent scene on page 90, and the first breakup on page 160. And so they have these formulae that work, and you put different names to them and put them in different countries. And basically the same things happen, but people feel that they're reading new books all the time. Okay, that's one world. But I'm talking about a world in which we want to think creatively. We want to bring new things into the world. And if we have that, we've got to think in terms not of what others have done, but what could be done. If you will look at anything that has been done that's made everybody marvel at the success of it, you will see that it's been done by somebody who stood back from things and said, not how can I do it differently, but how can I do it rightly for this? And that takes new thinking, not being hypnotized by the past. There's something else here. When I said not to think in terms just of doing a new thing, I'm thinking of a slideshow that I saw of the Holy Land. It was a Holy Man pilgrimage put out by a company in Germany. And I had just come back from Israel and had put together a slideshow, and so I was interested to see how they would handle it. And I was so amused to see that I could just imagine, having done photography myself, I could put myself in the photographer's shoes and feel how he was thinking. For example, there was this mountain on which Christ was transfigured. Now, when you imagine some view of transfiguration, you're thinking of something that moves upward, aren't you? I mean, that seems like the given. Well, this person, I could see the pride with which he did it, thinking no one else has ever thought to do this one. He hired a helicopter to go above Mount Tabor and take a picture from above, sort of a God's eye view of this scene of transfiguration. And what you get is a sort of a little squat mountain that looks more like a hill. It doesn't give you any of the feeling, and yet there's this feeling in him that he's being created because he's doing something nobody ever thought to do. Well, maybe they thought to do it and thought it was stupid, and that's why they didn't do it. I've seen a lot of people do things just because they thought they were different. To be different is not to be creative. If you will listen to a Beethoven symphony, and a very good example, if you're familiar with his music, is the second movement of the Seventh Symphony, where the melody is almost non-existent. The chords are absolutely the basic progressions that you learn in the first semester of any composition school. And yet, listening to it, you know that you're listening to a great piece of music, something that's deeply moving. He wasn't doing something different. He was doing something that was right. It was the right thing for what he was trying to say. You know, a platitude is a truth that people don't live. You wouldn't call it a platitude if it weren't true. But what makes it a platitude rather than a truth is that people all mouth it, but they don't live it. Otherwise, to say love is wonderful, if you really feel love and can speak from that sense of its wonder, would by no means be a platitude. There isn't a platitude that you couldn't say with so much concentration that it would become something completely new because you had lived it. So, in your search for new ideas and new ways of expressing those ideas, don't think in terms of just being different, but think in terms of being right. That is to say, doing that which is suitable to what you're trying to accomplish, that which is completely in tune with what you're trying to accomplish, and doing that in a fresh, new way, perhaps, but fresh and new primarily because you're putting your whole creative energy into it. And you'll find that just for that reason, you'll do it in a way that no one else has ever done. I've said that the melody was almost non-existent in that movement of Beethoven's. The rhythm was very basic, and yet nobody else had ever done the way he did it. There was some new thing, the rhythm, for example. It's a very moving piece of music. In fact, it's the first piece of classical music that really moved me. And so I speak from a lot of deep feeling about it. So, to reiterate, if you want to actualize your ideas, then don't be hypnotized by what's been done before. Don't worry about what others have done. Be interested in whether you can do it and do it in a fresh way. Don't listen to, but rather be willing to step outside the bounds of conventional wisdom.